Thank you. And a very, very former politician. I left politics in 1985. Would I be a politician today? I would, of course, say that I lost my heart to Åland Islands or something like that to flatter you all, but I'm not going to say that. I spent my time with the International Red Cross and founding different international organizations like the International Crisis Group and International Youth Foundation and European Cultural Parliament and so on. That's it. Everything has been said, but I need to say it again. That's the curse of being in the last panel. And I'd like to sharpen some of the arguments or just stress some of the arguments which have been so well put here today. And trying to answer the question, if you wish to market the Åland example internationally, what is the best argument you can find in you know? And I would put it in this way: the best way to get it accepted by an international audience. I visited about 150 countries in my life, and I never met a country where autonomy or minority rights has been generously offered to the population of any country which I know. So I would say that the success should be marketed by saying that Åland accepted autonomy as a good way of securing it, the life happiness of its population. It never strived or it lacked to strive towards independence. After a while, you may remember in the 20s and the 30s, there were, of course, strong feelings for joining Sweden, but they disappeared slowly or diminished slowly. I'm trying to tell briefly why I think this is so important. Because there is a strong suspicion against the concept of autonomy and minority rights, all this which belongs to the Åland example, against self-rule, demilitarization even, which has been touched very little upon during this day. Everywhere I moved there's the suspicion that autonomy is halfway towards secession, towards independence. And I might say that when South Sudan became independent just some time ago, I could feel a shiver going through Africa, for example, among all the states there, not only heads of state, but also decision makers on all levels. Will this really lead to a general movement towards secession and independence among the... I think President Halonen said that there are about hundred movements for independence around the world. I would say that if you would create states in Africa based on ethnicity, on language, you would have about 200 states at least. And that is the fear of many African leaders that for example, the South. Try to offer President Bashir, by the way, you shouldn't offer him anything, but in Khartoum, that give a little bit independence to Darfur or Blue Nile, and you can guess his reaction against that, because he saw the way South Sudan get the autonomy first, and then it ended up with independence. I'm not saying that I am against that. I think a few those states which are artificially created in Africa, there is a need to look at some of the borders. But nevertheless, I think this is the biggest obstacle, using Åland as an example, that the way it should be marketed. We have heard some recipes here. You could call it self-rule if you so wish, but I would argue against those lines that Åland came slowly, or rather quickly even, to the result that autonomy was a good model. And we have also heard today, and I differ from my friend Elisabeth now Claire here, that we heard from Markus Suksi that this is a very successful model. Everything in the world has to be looked in relation to the realities of the world and the realities. You saw it here. If you want to be compared with Zanzibar or Hong Kong, you are welcome. But you saw in what, let's say, category Åland was branded here in that, let's say, academic or scientific way of analyzing things. Coming to I could mention a small example here. I went to Georgia once, and a Georgian friend who was well placed in the hierarchy or the bureaucracy there said, could you help us a little bit to advise President Saakashvili on how to deal, that was a few years back, to deal with all the minorities and ethnic groups which we have in this country. That was before conflicts there. So I drafted a paper based on the International Crisis Group findings, which I'm a founding board member of. So, and it was handed over to through a very close friend to him. He never did anything. And a year later, he lost Abkhazia, as you know. I mean, the prevention, as Eliasson said here, is the better. We have a saying, the Red Cross, prevention is better than cure. And it also applies, as several speakers had said here, in presenting an Åland model or whatever autonomy model, that should happen before conflicts have gone too far, and there is no return anymore to the negotiation table. Speaking about language rights, one might say that there is a tendency in, I would say, world history, if I say so, that languages, the bigger languages tend to dominate, start to dominate, and smaller languages to disappear, I would say, or diminish in value, so to say. I call it a law of physics or something like that, but Åland example is against that trend, clearly, because you have created a language protected area, which is, I have found nowhere in the world, actually, where you have created a space where the language, in principle at least, could be protected forever. All other areas in the world, as far as I know, perhaps there are few exemptions, but it could live forever, so to say, based on the legal status of the Swedish language in these islands. There are actually, I have found no example of where the minority language is so well protected. Protection of minority groups, even in a European context, is rather weak, regardless of all these minority treaties which we have. I don't find Europe very interesting, the European Union very interesting from that point of view. I've been active also in the minority movement, which is rather weak in Europe, and we all know the reasons why. It's the resistance of France to accept, let's say, even in theory, because there have been a history of denial of the existence of any minority languages in France, as you know. Spain could be another example. Only the strength of the Catalan language group, 7 million people, creates a little bit different environment. In general observation would be that only a certain volume of a minority language can create, a state of security that goes to Canada, for example, where the Quebecois is also 7 million, I think, French speakers are 7 million. Only that can create, the basic security for a language in a bilingual or federal state. I would like to say in the end that I think that the history of Åland autonomy shows best in what circumstance, in what environment, historic environment, minority rights and autonomy can be secured. It doesn't happen every day. It doesn't, as I said, if you go to any country in the world, there would be a generous atmosphere, environment offering yes, we are ready to give our minority full rights, so we are giving to that doesn't exist. You can go on dreaming if you are looking for such states, as I said. And I end here by saying that Harri Holkeri, who's passed away, was quoted here by saying that the Åland example is not, let's say, an academic model, it's a way of thinking. And I agree with that. I think that's a good way of expressing things. And that also reveals to us the difficulty of promoting that model worldwide. Because how could you get, let's say, nations and people of the world change their way of thinking? That is a very, very long process. And I'm a little bit afraid that we are living in a Nordic bubble here, with Åland Island, with the Faroe Island, with Greenland. It's like promoting the Nordic welfare model to poor countries in the world and say that this is the perfect model, please accept it. Perhaps it's a little bit same with the Åland example. It's too sophisticated. It was born a long time ago. It takes time for an autonomy model to root itself in not only in autonomy itself, but also in the host country, so to say. And speaking about the host country, I think it was Sia who asked me that what is the way of promoting that model in mainland Finland? And I must say that based on my experience from public life, the Åland model is not a part of the Finnish identity, national identity. It's not a part of the Finnish national identity. It could be, it would be good for the Finnish, but as you know, emotionally and in no country in the world, I think autonomy is cheered as a good thing. Why is this so? That's a lot of psychology also. Autonomy hurts the feelings of nationalist pride. That is the basic concept we have to accept, that this is, it can never be marketed as, let's say, really as something which we should, the majority should enjoy. It feels a little bit hurt always. Also the same with minority languages. It is never an easy thing to market a minority language. Why don't you speak our language? It's so big, it's so nice. Look at the Russians and Americans, the two super nations, so to say. They could never understand the meaning, even if the Americans now have to have accept slowly that Spanish is becoming stronger and stronger. So that is the reality of life also. Okay. It's not rooted in the Finnish identity. I don't speak about those irrational and extremist groups in Finland who would use Åland as a bad example of going against the Finnish national feelings. In the end, I could only say that it is also important not to ghettoizing. So it was said here, the example. It should be promoted. I don't know how, but it. Probably through a Nordic model, that would be better than through a Finnish or a Swedish. Sweden has very little experience of this, and there is very little understanding. It took 30 years for Sweden to accept that there is a Finnish minority in Sweden and so on. So it's not easy in the Nordic country, but perhaps it would be better than to try to broaden the base. Thank you.